He sat on the opposite side, leaning his thin face on a thin hand, looking at me without interest. She drew her brows together, making two creases between them, and asked,
"You mean he knew someone meant to kill him?"
"I don't know. He didn't say what he wanted. Maybe just help in the reform campaign."
"But do you..."
I made a complaint. "It's no fun being a sleuth when somebody steals your stuff, does all the questioning." "I'd like to find out what's going on," she said, a little laugh gurgling down in her throat. "I'm that way, too. For instance, I'd like to know why you made him have the check certified." Very casually, Dan Rolfe shifted in his chair, leaning back, lowering his thin hands out of sight below the table's edge.
"So you found out about that?"
Dinah Brand asked. She crossed left leg over right and looked down, her eyes focused on the run in her stocking.
"Honest to God, I'm going to stop wearing them," she complained. "I'm going barefooted. I paid $5 for these socks yesterday. Now look at the damned things. Every day, runs, runs, runs."
"It's no secret," I said. "I mean the check, not the runs. Noonan's got it." She looked at Rolfe, who stopped watching me long enough to nod once.
"If you talked my language," she drawled, looking narrow-eyed at me, "I might be able to give you some help."
"Maybe if I knew what it was."
"Money," she explained. "The more, the better. I like it."
I became proverbial. "Money saved is money earned. I can save you money and grief."
"That doesn't mean anything to me," she said, "though it sounds like it's meant to."
"The police haven't asked you anything about the check?" She shook her head, no. I said, "Noonan's figuring on hanging the rap on you as well as on Whisper."
"Don't scare me," she lisped. "I'm only a child."
"Noonan knows that Thaler knew about the check. He knows that Thaler came here while Wilson was here, but didn't get in. He knows that Thaler was hanging around the neighborhood when Wilson was shot. He knows that Thaler and a woman were seen bending over the dead man." The girl picked up a pencil from the table and thoughtfully scratched her cheek with it. The pencil made little curly black lines over the rouge. Rolfe's eyes had lost their wariness. They were bright, feverish, fixed on mine. He leaned forward but kept his hands out of sight below the table.
"Those things," he said, "concern Thaler, not Miss Brand."
"Thaler and Miss Brand aren't strangers," I said. "Wilson brought a $5,000 check here and was killed leaving. That way, Miss Brand might have had trouble cashing it if Wilson hadn't been thoughtful enough to get it certified."
"My God," the girl protested. "If I'd been going to kill him, I'd have done it in here where nobody could have seen it, or waited until he got out of sight of the house. What kind of a dumb onion do you take me for?"
"I'm not sure you killed him," I said. "I'm just sure that the fat chief means to hang it on you."
"What are you trying to do?" she asked.
"Learn who killed him. Not who could have or might have, but who did."
"I could give you some help," she said, "but there'd have to be something in it for me."
"Safety," I reminded her, but she shook her head.
"I mean, it would have to get me something in a financial way. It'd be worth something to you, and you ought to pay something, even if not a fortune."
"Can't be done," I grinned at her. "Forget the bankroll and go in for charity. Pretend I'm Bill Quint." Dan Rolfe started up from his chair, lips white as the rest of his face. He sat down again when the girl laughed, a lazy, good-natured laugh.
"He thinks I didn't make any profit out of Bill, Dan."
She leaned over and put a hand on my knee. Suppose you knew far enough ahead that a company's employees were going to strike, and when, and then far enough ahead when they were going to call the strike off. Could you take that info and some capital to the stock market and do yourself some good playing with the company's stock? You bet you could, she wound up triumphantly. So don't go around thinking that Bill didn't pay his way. You've been spoiled, I said. What in the name of God's the use of being so tight? She demanded. It's not like it had to come out of your pocket. You've got an expense account, haven't you? I didn't say anything. She frowned at me, at the run in her stocking, and at Rolf. Then she said to him, Maybe he'd loosen up if he had a drink. The thin man got up and went out of the room. She pouted at me, prodded my shin with her toe, and said, It's not so much the money. It's the principle of the thing. If a girl's got something that's worth something to somebody, she's a boob if she doesn't collect. I grinned. Why don't you be a good guy? She begged. Dan Rolf came in with a siphon, a bottle of gin, some lemons, and a bowl of cracked ice. We had a drink apiece. The longer went away. The girl and I wrangled over the money question while we had more drinks. I kept trying to keep the conversation on Thaler and Wilson. She kept switching it to the money she deserved. It went on that way until the gin bottle was empty. My watch said 1:15. She chewed a piece of lemon peel and said for the 30th or 40th time, It won't come out of your pocket. What do you care? It's not the money, I said. It's the principle of the thing. She made a face at me and put her glass where she thought the table was. She was 8 inches wrong. I don't remember if the glass broke when it hit the floor or what happened to it. I do remember that I was encouraged by her missing the table. Another thing, I opened up a new argumentative line. I'm not sure I really need whatever you can tell me. If I have to get along without it, I think I can. It'll be nice if you can. But don't forget, I'm the last person who saw him alive, except whoever killed him. Wrong, I said. His wife saw him come out, walk away, and fall. His wife? Yeah. She was sitting in a coop down the street. How did she know he was here? She says Thaler phoned her that her husband had come here with the check. You're trying to kid me, the girl said. Max couldn't have known it. I'm telling you what Mrs. Wilson told Noonan and me. The girl spit what was left of the lemon peel out on the floor, further disarranged her hair by running her fingers through it, wiped her mouth with the back of her hand, and slapped the table. All right, Mr. Know-it-all, she said. I'm going to play with you. You can think it's not going to cost you anything, but I'll get mine before we're through. You think I won't? She challenged me, peering at me as if I were a block away. This was no time to revive the money argument, so I said, I hope you do. I think I said it 3 or 4 times, quite earnestly. I will. Now listen to me. You're drunk, and I'm drunk. And I'm just exactly drunk enough to tell you anything you want to know. That's the kind of girl I am. If I like a person, I'll tell them anything they want to know. Just ask me. Go ahead, ask me. I did. What did Wilson give you $5,000 for? For fun. She leaned back to laugh. Then, listen. He was hunting for scandal. I had some of it. Some affidavits and things that I thought might be good for a piece of change someday. I'm a girl that likes to pick up a little jack when she can.
So I had put these things away. When Donald began going after scalps, I let him know that I had these things, and that they were for sale. I gave him enough of a peep at them to let him know they were good, and they were good. Then we talked about how much. He wasn't as tight as you. Nobody ever was. But he was a little bit close. So the bargain hung fire till yesterday. Then I gave him the rush, phoned him and told him I had another customer for the stuff, and that if he wanted it, he'd have to show up that night with either 5,000 smacks in cash or a certified check. That was hooey, but he hadn't been around much, so he fell for it.
Why 10 o'clock? I asked.
Why not? That's as good a time as any other. The main thing on a deal like that is to give them a definite time. Now you want to know why it had to be cash or a certified check? All right, I'll tell you. I'll tell you anything you want to know. That's the kind of girl I am. Always was.
She went on that way for 5 minutes, telling me in detail just which and what sort of a girl she was, and always had been, and why. I yes-yesed her until I got a chance to cut in with, "All right, now why did it have to be a certified check?" She shut one eye, waggled a forefinger at me, and said,
"So he couldn't stop payment. Because he couldn't have used the stuff I sold him. It was good, all right. It was too good. It would have put his old man in jail with the rest of them. It would have nailed Papa Elihu tighter than anyone else."
I laughed with her while I tried to keep my head above the gin I had guzzled. "Who else would it nail?" I asked.
"The whole damned lot of them." She waved a hand. "Max, Lou Yard, Pete Noonan, and Elihu Wilson. The whole damned lot of them."
"Did Max Thaler know what you were doing?"
"Of course not. Nobody but Donald Wilson."
"Sure of that?"
"Sure, I'm sure. You don't think I was going around bragging about it ahead of time, do you?"
"Who do you think knows about it now?"
"I don't care," she said. "It was only a joke on him. He couldn't have used the stuff."
"Do you think the birds whose secrets you sold will see anything funny in it? Noonan's trying to hang the killing on you and Thaler. That means he found the stuff in Donald Wilson's pocket. They all thought old Elihu was using his son to break them, didn't they?"
"Yes, sir," she said. "And I'm one who thinks the same thing."
"You're probably wrong, but that doesn't matter. If Noonan found the things you sold Donald Wilson in his pocket, and learned you had sold them to him, why shouldn't he add that up to mean that you and your friend Thaler had gone over to old Elihu's side?
He can see that old Elihu would be hurt as much as anybody else.
What was this junk you sold him?"
"They built a new city hall 3 years ago, she said, "and none of them lost any money on it. If Noonan got the papers, he'll pretty soon find out that they tied as much on old Elihu, or more, than on anybody else."
"That doesn't make any difference. He'll take it for granted that the old man had found an out for himself." "Take my word for it, sister. Noonan and his friends think you and Thaler and Elihu are double-crossing them."
"I don't give a damn what they think," she said obstinately. "It was only a joke. That's all I meant it for. That's all it was."
"That's good," I growled. "You can go to the gallows with a clear conscience. Have you seen Thaler since the murder?"
"No, but Max didn't kill him, if that's what you think, even if he was around."
"Why?"
"Lots of reasons. First place, Max wouldn't have done it himself. He'd have had somebody else do it, and he'd have been way off with an alibi nobody could shake. Second place, Max carries a .38, and anybody he sent to do the job would have had that much gun or more. What kind of a gunman would use a .32?
Then who did it?
I've told you all I know, she said. I've told you too much.
I stood up and said, no, you've told me just exactly enough.
You mean you think you know who killed him?
Yeah, though there's a couple of things I'll have to cover before I make the pinch.
Who? Who?
She stood up, suddenly almost sober, tugging at my lapels.
Tell me who did it.
Not now.
Be a good guy.
Not now. She let go my lapels, put her hands behind her, and laughed in my face.
All right. Keep it to yourself, and try to figure out which part of what I told you is the truth.
I said, thanks for the part that is, anyhow, and for the gin. And if Max Thaler means anything to you, you ought to pass him the word that Noonan's trying to rib him. Chapter 5. Old Elihu Talks Sense. It was close to 2:30 in the morning when I reached the hotel. With my key, the night clerk gave me a memorandum that asked me to call Poplar 605. I knew the number. It was Elihu Wilson's. When did this come? I asked the clerk.
A little after 1.
That sounded urgent. I went back to a booth and put in the call. The old man's secretary answered, asking me to come out at once. I promised to hurry, asked the clerk to get me a taxi, and went up to my room for a shot of scotch. I would rather have been cold sober, but I wasn't. If the night held more work for me, I didn't want to go to it with alcohol dying in me. The snifter revived me a lot. I poured more of the King George into a flask, pocketed it, and went down to the taxi. Elihu Wilson's house was lighted from top to bottom. The secretary opened the front door before I could get my finger on the button. His thin body was shivering in pale blue pajamas and dark blue bathrobe. His thin face was full of excitement.
"Hurry," he said. "Mr. Wilson is waiting. And please, will you try to persuade him to let us have the body removed?"
I promised and followed him up to the old man's bedroom. Old Elihu was in bed as before, but now a black automatic pistol lay on the covers close to one of his pink hands. As soon as I appeared, he took his head off the pillows, sat upright, and barked at me.
"Have you got as much guts as you've got gall?"
His face was an unhealthy dark red. The film was gone from his eyes. They were hard and hot. I let his question wait while I looked at the corpse on the floor between door and bed. A short, thick-set man in brown lay on his back with dead eyes staring at the ceiling from under the visor of a gray cap. A piece of his jaw had been knocked off. His chin was tilted to show where another bullet had gone through tie and collar to make a hole in his neck. One arm was bent under him. The other hand held a blackjack as big as a milk bottle. There was a lot of blood. I looked up from this mess to the old man. His grin was vicious and idiotic.
"You're a great talker," he said. "I know that. A two-fisted, you be damned man with your words, but have you got anything else? Have you got the guts to match your gall? Or is it just the language you've got?"
There was no use in trying to get along with the old boy. I scowled and reminded him, "Didn't I tell you not to bother me unless you wanted to talk sense for a change?"
"You did, my lad."
There was a foolish sort of triumph in his voice.
"And I'll talk you your sense. I want a man to clean this pigsty of a Poisonville for me, to smoke out the rats, little and big. It's a man's job. Are you a man?"
What's the use of getting poetic about it? I growled. If you've got a fairly honest piece of work to be done in my line, and you want to pay a decent price, maybe I'll take it on. But a lot of foolishness about smoking rats and pig pens doesn't mean anything to me. All right. I want Personville emptied of its crooks and grafters. Is that plain enough language for you?
You didn't want it this morning, I said. Why do you want it now?
The explanation was profane and lengthy, and given to me in a loud and blustering voice. The substance of it was that he had built Personville brick by brick with his own hands, and he was going to keep it or wipe it off the side of the hill. Nobody could threaten him in his own city, no matter who they were. He had let them alone, but when they started telling him, Elihu Wilson, what he had to do and what he couldn't do, he would show them who was who. He brought the speech to an end by pointing at the corpse and boasting,
"That'll show them there's still a sting in the old man."
I wished I were sober. His clowning puzzled me. I couldn't put my finger on the something behind it.
"Your playmate sent him?" I asked, nodding at the dead man. "I only talked to him with this," he said, patting the automatic on the bed. "But I reckon they did."
"How did it happen?"
"It happened simple enough. I heard the door opening, and I switched on the light, and there he was, and I shot him, and there he is."
"What time?"
"It was about 1 o'clock.
"And you've let him lie there all this time?"
"That I have."
The old man laughed savagely and began blustering again.
"Does the sight of a dead man turn your stomach? Or is it his spirit you're afraid of?"
I laughed at him. Now I had it. The old boy was scared stiff. Fright was the something behind his clowning. That was why he blustered, and why he wouldn't let them take the body away. He wanted it there to look at, to keep panic away, visible proof of his ability to defend himself. I knew where I stood. "You really want the town cleaned up?" I asked.
"I said I did, and I do."
"I'd have to have a free hand, no favors to anybody, run the job as I pleased, and I'd have to have a $10,000 retainer."
$10,000? Why in hell should I give that much to a man I don't know from Adam? A man who's done nothing I know of but talk.
Be serious. When I say me, I mean the Continental. You know them."
"I do. And they know me. And they ought to know I'm good for—"
"That's not the idea. These people you want taken to the cleaners were friends of yours yesterday. Maybe they will be friends again next week. I don't care about that. But I'm not playing politics for you. I'm not hiring out to help you kick them back in line with the job being called off then. If you want the job done, you'll plank down enough money to pay for a complete job. Any that's left over will be returned to you. But you're going to get a complete job or nothing. That's the way it'll have to be, take it or leave it."
"I'll damned well leave it," he bawled.
He let me get halfway down the stairs before he called me back.
"I'm an old man," he grumbled. "If I was 10 years younger..." He glared at me and worked his lips together. "I'll give you your damn check."
"And authority to go through with it in my own way?"
"Yes."
"We'll get it done now. Where's your secretary?" Wilson pushed a button on his bedside table, and the silent secretary appeared from wherever he had been hiding. I told him, "Mr. Wilson wants to issue a $10,000 check to the Continental Detective Agency, and he wants to write the agency, San Francisco branch, a letter authorizing the agency to use the $10,000 investigating crime and political corruption in Personville. The letter is to state clearly that the agency is to conduct the investigation as it sees fit." The secretary looked questioningly at the old man, who frowned and ducked his round white head. "But first," I told the secretary as he glided toward the door, "you'd better phone the police that we've got a dead burglar here. Then call Mr. Wilson's doctor."
the old man declared. He didn't want any damned doctors.
You're going to have a nice shot in the arm so you can sleep, I promised him, stepping over the corpse to take the black gun from the bed. I'm going to stay here tonight, and we'll spend most of tomorrow sifting Poisonville affairs.
The old man was tired. His voice, when he profanely and somewhat long-windedly told me what he thought of my impudence in deciding what was best for him, barely shook the windows. I took off the dead man's cap for a better look at his face. It didn't mean anything to me. I put the cap back in place. When I straightened up, the old man asked, moderately,
"Are you getting anywhere in your hunt for Donald's murderer?"
"I think so. Another day ought to see it finished."
"Who?" he asked.
The secretary came in with the letter and the check. I gave them to the old man instead of an answer to his question. He put a shaky signature on each, and I had them folded in my pocket when the police arrived. The first copper came into the room was the chief himself, Fat Noonan. He nodded amiably at Wilson, shook hands with me, and looked with twinkling greenish eyes at the dead man.
"Well, well," he said, "it's a good job he did, whoever did it. Yakima Shorty. And will you look at the sap he's toting?"
He kicked the blackjack out of the dead man's hand.
"Big enough to sink a battleship.
You drop him?"
he asked me. "Mr. Wilson."
"Well, that certainly is fine,"
he congratulated the old man.
"You saved a lot of people a lot of troubles, including me. Pack 'em out, boys,"
he said to the four men behind him. The two in uniform picked Yakima Shorty up by legs and armpits and went away with him, while one of the others gathered up the blackjack and a flashlight that had been under the body.
"If everybody did that to their prowlers, it would certainly be fine,"
the chief babbled on. He brought three cigars out of a pocket, threw one over on the bed, stuck one at me, and put the other in his mouth.
"I was just wondering where I could get hold of you," he told me as we lighted up. "I got a little job ahead that I thought you'd like to be in on. That's how I happened to be on tap when the rumble came."
He put his mouth close to my ear and whispered,
"Going to pick up Whisper. Want to come along?"
"Yeah."
"I thought you would."
"Hello, Doc."
He shook hands with a man who had just come in, a little plump man with a tired oval face and gray eyes that still had sleep in them. The doctor went to the bed where one of Noonan's men was asking Wilson about the shooting. I followed the secretary into the hall and asked him, "Any man in the house besides you?"
"Yes, the chauffeur, the Chinese cook."
"Let the chauffeur stay in the old man's room tonight. I'm going out with Noonan. I'll get back as soon as I can. I don't think there'll be any more excitement here, but no matter what happens, don't leave the old man alone. And don't leave him alone with Noonan or any of Noonan's crew." The secretary's mouth and eyes popped wide. "What time did you leave Donald Wilson last night?" I asked.
"You mean night before last, the night he was killed?"
"Yeah."
"At precisely 9:30.
"You were with him from 5 o'clock till then?"
"From 5:15. We went over some statements and that sort of thing in his office until nearly 8 o'clock. Then we went to Bayard's and finished our business over our dinners. He left at 9:30, saying he had an engagement."
"What else did he say about this engagement?"
"Nothing else."
"Didn't give you any hint of where he was going, who he was going to meet?"
"He merely said he had an engagement."
"And you didn't know anything about it?"
"No.
Why?"
"Did you think I did?"
"I thought he might have said something." I switched back to tonight's doings. "What visitors did Wilson have today, not counting the one he shot?"
"You'll have to pardon me," the secretary said, smiling apologetically. "I can't tell you that without Mr. Wilson's permission. I'm sorry."
"Weren't some of the local powers here, say, Lou Yard, or..." The secretary shook his head, repeating, "I'm sorry."
"We won't fight over it," I said.
giving it up and starting back toward the bedroom door. The doctor came out, buttoning his overcoat.
"He will sleep now," he said hurriedly. "Someone should stay with him. I shall be in the morning." He ran downstairs.
I went into the bedroom. The chief and the man who had questioned Wilson were standing by the bed. The chief grinned as if he were glad to see me. The other man scowled. Wilson was lying on his back, staring at the ceiling.
"That's about all there is here," Noonan said. "What say we mosey along?"
I agreed and said,
"Good night," to the old man. He said, "Good night," without looking at me.
The secretary came in with the chauffeur, a tall, sunburned young husky. The chief, the other sleuth, a police lieutenant named McGraw, and I went downstairs and got into the chief's car. McGraw sat beside the driver. The chief and I sat in back.
"We'll make the pinch along about daylight," Noonan explained as we rode. "Whisper's got a joint over on King Street. He generally leaves there along about daylight. We could crash the place, but that'd mean gunplay, and it's just as well to take it easy. We'll pick him up when he leaves."
I wondered if he meant pick him up or pick him off. I asked, "Got enough on him to make the rap stick?"
"Enough?" He laughed good-naturedly. "If what the Wilson dame give us ain't enough to stretch him, I'm a pickpocket."
I thought of a couple of wisecrack answers to that. I kept them to myself. Chapter 6. Whisper's Joint. Our ride ended under a line of trees in a dark street not far from the center of town. We got out of the car and walked down to the corner. A burly man in a gray overcoat with a gray hat pulled down over his eyes came to meet us.
"Whisper's hep," the burly man told the chief. "He phoned Donahoe that he's gonna stay in his joint. If you think you can pull him out, try it," he says.
Noonan chuckled, scratched an ear, and asked pleasantly, "How many would you say is in there with him?"
50 anyhow."
"Aw, now. There wouldn't be that many, not at this time of the morning."
"The hell there wouldn't," the burly man snarled. "They've been drifting in since midnight."
"Is that so? A leak somewheres. Maybe you oughtn't to have let them in."
"Maybe I oughtn't," the burly man was angry. "But I did what you told me. You said let anybody go in or out that wanted to. But when Whisper showed to
pinch him," the chief said.
"Well, yes," the burly man agreed, looking savagely at me.
More men joined us, and we held a talk fest. Everybody was in a bad humor except the chief. He seemed to enjoy it all. I didn't know why. Whisper's joint was a three-story brick building in the middle of the block between two 2-story buildings. The ground floor of his joint was occupied by a cigar store that served as entrance and cover for the gambling establishment upstairs. Inside, if the burly man's information was to be depended on, Whisper had collected 50 friends loaded for a fight. Outside, Noonan's force was spread around the building, in the street in front, in the alley in back, and on the adjoining roofs.
"Well, boys," the chief said amiably after everybody had had his say, "I don't reckon Whisper wants trouble any more than we do.
Or he'd have tried to shoot his way out before this, if he's got that many with him. Though I don't mind saying I don't think he has not that many."
The burly man said,
"The hell he ain't."
"So if he don't want trouble," Noonan went on, "maybe talking might do some good. You run over Nick and see if you can't argue him into being peaceable."
The burly man said, "The hell I will."
"Phone him then," the chief suggested. The burly man growled,
"That's more like it,"
and went away. When he came back, he looked completely satisfied.
"He says," he reported, "go to hell."
"Get the rest of the boys down here," Noonan said cheerfully. "We'll knock it over as soon as it gets light." The burly Nick and I went around with the chief while he made sure his men were properly placed. I didn't think much of them. a shabby, shifty-eyed crew without enthusiasm for the job ahead of them. The sky became a faded gray. The chief, Nick, and I stopped in a plumber's doorway diagonally across the street from our target. Whisper's joint was dark, the upper windows blank, blinds down over cigar store windows and door.
"I hate to start this without giving Whisper a chance," Noonan said. "He's not a bad kid, but there's no use me trying to talk to him. He never did like me much."
He looked at me. I said nothing. "You wouldn't want to make a stab at it?" he asked.
"Yeah, I'll try it."
"That's fine of you. I'll certainly appreciate it if you will. You just see if you can talk him into coming along without any fuss. You know what to say, for his own good and all that, like it is."
"Yeah," I said, and walked across to the cigar store, taking pains to let my hands be seen swinging empty at my sides.
Day was still a little way off. The street was the color of smoke. My feet made a lot of noise on the pavement. I stopped in front of the door and knocked the glass with a knuckle, not heavily. The green blind down inside the door made a mirror of the glass. In it, I saw two men moving up the other side of the street. No sound came from inside. I knocked harder, then slid my hand down to rattle the knob. Advice came from indoors.
"Get away from there while you're able."
It was a muffled voice, but not a whisper, so probably not Whisper's.
"I want to talk to Thaler," I said. "Go talk to the lard can that sent you."
"I'm not talking for Noonan. Is Thaler where he can hear me?" A pause, then the muffled voice said,
"Yes.
I'm the Continental cop who tipped Dinah Brand off that Noonan was framing you," I said. "I want 5 minutes talk with you. I've got nothing to do with Noonan except to queer his racket. I'm alone. I'll drop my rod in the street if you say so. Let me in." I waited. It depended on whether the girl had got to him with the story of my interview with her. I waited what seemed a long time. The muffled voice said,
"When we open, come in quick, and no stunts."
"All set." The latch clicked. I plunged in with the door. Across the street, a dozen guns emptied themselves. Glass shot from door and windows tinkled around us. Somebody tripped me. Fear gave me 3 brains and 6 eyes. I was in a tough spot. Noonan had slipped me a pretty dose. These birds couldn't help thinking I was playing his game. I tumbled down, twisting around to face the door. My gun was in my hand by the time I hit the floor. Across the street, Burly Nick had stepped out of a doorway to pump slugs at us with both hands. I steadied my gun arm on the floor. Nick's body showed over the front sight. I squeezed the gun. Nick stopped shooting. He crossed his guns on his chest and went down in a pile on the sidewalk. Hands on my ankles dragged me back. The floor scraped pieces off my chin. The door slammed shut. Some comedian said,
"Uh-huh, people don't like you."
I sat up and shouted through the racket, "I wasn't in on this." The shooting dwindled, stopped. Door and window blinds were dotted with gray holes. A husky whisper said in the darkness,
"Todd, you and Slats keep an eye on things down here. The rest of us might as well go upstairs."
We went through a room behind the store into a passageway, up a flight of carpeted steps, and into a second-story room that held a green table banked for crap shooting. It was a small room, had no windows, and the lights were on. There were 5 of us. Thaler sat down and lit a cigarette. A small, dark young man with a face that was pretty in a chorus man way until you took another look at the thin, hard mouth. An angular blonde kid of no more than 20 in tweeds sprawled on his back on a couch and blew cigarette smoke at the ceiling. Another boy, as blonde and as young but not so angular, was busy straightening his scarlet tie, smoothing his yellow hair. A thin-faced man of 30, with little or no chin under a wide, loose mouth, wandered up and down the room looking bored and humming Rosy Cheeks. I sat in a chair 2 or 3 feet from Thaler's.
"How long is Noonan going to keep this up?" he asked.
There was no emotion in his hoarse, whispering voice, only a shade of annoyance. "He's after you this trip," I said. "I think he's going through with it." The gambler smiled a thin, contemptuous smile.
"He ought to know what a swell chance he's got of hanging a one-legged rap like that on me."
"He's not figuring on proving anything in court," I said.
"No.
You're to be knocked off resisting arrest or trying to make a getaway. He won't need much of a case after that."
"He's getting tough in his old age."
The thin lips curved in another smile. He didn't seem to think much of the Fat Chief's deadliness.
"Any time he rubs me out, I deserve rubbing. What's he got against you?"
"He's guessed I'm going to make a nuisance of myself."
"Too bad. Dinah told me you were a pretty good guy, except kind of scotch with the roll."
"I had a nice visit. Will you tell me what you know about Donald Wilson's killing?"
"His wife plugged him."
"You saw her?"
"I saw her the next second, with the gat in her hand."
"That's no good to either of us," I said. "I don't know how far you've got it cooked. Rigged right, you could make it stick in court, maybe. But you'll not get a chance to make your play there. If Noonan takes you at all, he'll take you stiff. Give me the straight of it. I only need that to pop the job." He dropped his cigarette on the floor, mashed it under his foot, and asked,
"You that hot?"
"Give me your slant on it, and I'm ready to make the pinch, if I can get out of here." He lit another cigarette and asked,
"Mrs. Wilson said it was me that phoned her?"
"Yeah. After Noonan had persuaded her, she believes it now, maybe."
"You dropped Big Nick," he said. "I'll take a chance on you. A man phoned me that night. I don't know him, don't know who he was. He said Wilson had gone to Dinah's with a check for $5,000. What the hell did I care? But, see, it was funny, somebody I didn't know cracked it to me, so I went around. Dan stalled me away from the door. That was all right, but still, it was funny as hell that guy phoned me. I went up the street and took a plant in a vestibule. I saw Mrs. Wilson's heap standing in the street, but I didn't know then that it was hers or that she was in it. He came out pretty soon and walked down the street. I didn't see the shots, I heard them. Then this woman jumps out of the heap and runs over to him. I knew she hadn't done the shooting. I ought to have beat it. But it was all funny as hell, so when I saw the woman was Wilson's wife, I went over to them, trying to find out what it was all about. That was a break, see? So I had to make an out for myself, in case something slipped. I strung the woman. That's the whole damn works, on the level."
"Thanks," I said. "That's what I came for. Now the trick is to get out of here without being mowed down."
"No trick at all," Thaler assured me. "We go any time we want to."
"I want to now. If I were you, I'd go too. You've got Noonan pegged as a false alarm, but why take a chance? Make the sneak and keep undercover till noon, and his frame-up will be a washout." Thaler put his hand in his pants pocket and brought out a fat roll of paper money. He counted off 100 or 2, some 50s, 20s, 10s, and held them out to the chinless man, saying,
"Buy us a getaway, Jerry, and you don't have to give anybody any more dough than he's used to."
Jerry took the money, picked up a hat from the table, and strolled out. Half an hour later, he returned and gave some of the bills back to Thaler, saying casually, "We wait in the kitchen till we get in the office." We went down to the kitchen. It was dark there. More men joined us. Jerry opened the door and we went down 3 steps into the backyard. It was almost full daylight. There were 10 of us in the party. "This all?" I asked Thaler. He nodded. "Nick said there were 50 of you."
50 of us to stand off that crummy force," he sneered.
A uniformed copper held the back gate open, muttering nervously,
"Hurry it up, boys, please."
I was willing to hurry, but nobody else paid any attention to him. We crossed an alley, were beckoned through another gate by a big man in brown, passed through a house, out into the next street, and climbed into a black automobile that stood at the curb. One of the blonde boys drove. He knew what speed was. I said I wanted to be dropped off somewhere in the neighborhood of the Great Western Hotel. The driver looked at Whisper, who nodded. 5 minutes later, I got out in front of my hotel.
"See you later,"
the gambler whispered, and the car slid away. The last I saw of it was its police department license plate vanishing around a corner. Chapter 7. That's Why I Sewed You Up. It was 5:30. I walked around a few blocks until I came to an unlighted electric sign that said Hotel Crawford, climbed a flight of steps to the second floor office, registered, left a call for 10 o'clock, was shown into a shabby room, moved some of the scotch from my flask to my stomach, and took old Elihu's $10,000 check and my gun to bed with me. At 10, I dressed, went up to the First National Bank, found young Albury, and asked him to certify Wilson's check for me. He kept me waiting a while. I suppose he phoned the old man's residence to find out if the check was on the up and up. Finally, he brought it back to me, properly scribbled on. I sponged an envelope, put the old man's letter and check in it, addressed it to the agency in San Francisco, stuck a stamp on it, and went out and dropped it in the mailbox on the corner. Then I returned to the bank and said to the boy, "Now tell me why you killed him." He smiled and asked, "Cock Robin or President Lincoln?" "You're not going to admit offhand that you killed Donald Wilson." "I don't want to be disagreeable," he said, still smiling, "but I'd rather not." "That's going to make it bad," I complained. "We can't stand here and argue very long without being interrupted. Who's the stout party with cheaters coming this way?" The boy's face pinkened. He said, "Mr. Dritton, the cashier." "Introduce me." The boy looked uncomfortable, but he called the cashier's name. Dritton, a large man with a smooth pink face, a fringe of white hair around an otherwise bald pink head, and rimless nose glasses, came over to us. The assistant cashier mumbled the introductions. I shook Dritton's hand without losing sight of the boy. "I was just saying," I addressed Dritton, "that we ought to have a more private place to talk in. He probably won't confess till I've worked on him a while, and I don't want everybody in the bank to hear me yelling at him."
"Confess?"
The cashier's tongue showed between his lips. "Sure." I kept my face, voice, and manner bland, mimicking Noonan. "Didn't you know that Albury is the fellow who killed Donald Wilson?" A polite smile at what he thought an asinine joke started behind the cashier's glasses, and changed to puzzlement when he looked at his assistant. The boy was rouge red, and the grin he was forcing his mouth to wear was a terrible thing. Dritton cleared his throat and said heartily,
"It's a splendid morning. We've been having splendid weather."
"But isn't there a private room where we can talk?" I insisted. Dritton jumped nervously and questioned the boy.
What is this?"
Young Albury said something nobody could have understood. I said, "If there isn't, I'll have to take him down to the city hall." Dritton caught his glasses as they slid down his nose, jammed them back in place, and said,
"Come back here."
We followed him down the length of the lobby, through a gate, and into an office whose door was labeled President, old Elihu's office. Nobody was in it. I motioned Albury into one chair and picked another for myself. The cashier fidgeted with his back against the desk, facing both of us.
"Now, sir, will you explain this?" he said.
"We'll get around to that," I told him, and turned to the boy. "You're an ex-boyfriend of Dinah's who was given the heir. You're the only one who knew her intimately, who could have known about the certified check in time to phone Mrs. Wilson and Thaler. Wilson was shot with a .32. Banks like that caliber. Maybe the gun you used wasn't a bank gun, but I think it was.
Maybe you didn't put it back.
Then there'll be one missing. Anyway, I'm going to have a gun expert put his microscopes and micrometers on the bullets that killed Wilson and bullets fired from all the bank guns.
The boy looked calmly at me and said nothing. He had himself under control again.
That wouldn't do. I had to be nasty. I said,
"You were cuckoo over the girl. You confessed to me that it was only because she wouldn't stand for it that you didn't."
"Don't, please, don't,"
he gasped. His face was red again. I made myself sneer at him until his eyes went down. Then I said,
"You talk too much, son. You were too damned anxious to make your life an open book for me. That's a way you amateur criminals have. You've always got to overdo the frank and open business."
He was watching his hands. I let him have the other barrel. "You know you killed him. You know if you used a bank gun and if you put it back. If you did, you're nailed now, without an out. The gun sharks will take care of that. If you didn't, I'm going to nail you anyhow."
"All right. I don't have to tell you whether you've got a chance or not. You know."
Noonan is framing Whisper Thaler for the job. He can't convict him, but the frame-up is tight enough that if Thaler's killed resisting arrest, the chief will be in the clear. That's what he means to do. Kill Thaler. Thaler stood off the police all night in his King Street joint. He's still standing them off, unless they've got to him. The first copper that gets to him, exit Thaler. If you figure you've got a chance to beat your rap and you want to let another man be killed on your account, that's your business. But if you know you haven't got a chance, and you haven't if the gun can be found, for God's sake, give Thaler one by clearing him.
"I'd like..." Aubrey's voice was an old man's. He looked up from his hands, saw Dritten, said, "I'd like..." again, and stopped.
"Where is the gun?" I asked.
"In Harper's cage," the boy said. I scowled at the cashier and asked him, "Will you get it?" He went out as if he were glad to go.
"I didn't mean to kill him," the youngster said. "I don't think I meant to."
I nodded encouragingly, trying to look solemnly sympathetic.
"I don't think I meant to kill him," he repeated, "though I took the gun with me. You were right about my being cuckoo over Dinah, then. It was worse some days than others. The day Wilson brought the check in was one of the bad ones. All I could think about was that I had lost her because I had no more money, and he was taking $5,000 to her. It was the check. Can you understand that? I had known that she and Thaler were, you know. If I had learned that Wilson and she were, too, without seeing the check, I wouldn't have done anything. I'm sure of it. It was seeing the check and knowing I'd lost her because my money was gone. I watched her house that night and saw him go in. I was afraid of what I might do, because it was one of the bad days, and I had the gun in my pocket. Honestly, I didn't want to do anything. I was afraid. I couldn't think of anything but the check and why I had lost her. I knew Wilson's wife was jealous. Everybody knew that. I thought if I called her up and told her, I don't know exactly what I thought, but I went to a store around the corner and phoned her. Then I phoned Thaler. I wanted them there. If I could have thought of anyone else who had anything to do with either Dinah or Wilson, I'd have called them, too. Then I went back and watched Dinah's house again. Mrs. Wilson came, and then Thaler, and both of them stayed there, watching the house. I was glad of that. With them there, I wasn't so afraid of what I might do. After a while, Wilson came out and walked down the street. I looked up at Mrs. Wilson's car and at the doorway where I knew Thaler was. Neither of them did anything, and Wilson was walking away. I knew then why I had wanted them there. I had hoped they would do something, and I wouldn't have to. But they didn't, and he was walking away. If one of them had gone over and said something to him or even followed him, I wouldn't have done anything. but they didn't. I remember taking the gun out of my pocket. Everything was blurred in front of my eyes, like I was crying. Maybe I was. I don't remember shooting. I mean, I don't remember deliberately aiming and pulling the trigger, but I can remember the sound the shots made, and that I knew the noise was coming from the gun in my hand. I don't remember how Wilson looked, if he fell before I turned and ran up the alley, or not. When I got home, I cleaned and reloaded the pistol and put it back in the paying teller's cage the next